Right. Hello. Welcome to another Future Pharmacist conference session. Who we got tonight? So nice optimistic title tonight. Will robots be the death of community pharmacy? Hopefully a bit of conversation around that. So we've got two learned friends here tonight. So we've got James Semple. James is a community pharmacy contractor, and he's currently vice chairman of Community Pharmacy Scotland Board. Is that correct, James? Still vice?
Still vice after all these years. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Such a travesty. Never mind. Next, Kevin Murphy is co-founder of MedPoint. But he's also an incredibly busy man as well. So he's also a superintendent pharmacist at Wellbeing Pharmacist Group, co-founder and clinical director at Acorn as well. So nice to see you, chaps. So what we're going to talk about tonight is robotics, right? So massive sort of strides have been made by various players in the market around robotics for years. We've had, you know, the BD Roa dispensing machines, we've had PillPack Plus, we've had, but more recently we've had the vending machines as well. And some of the topics we're hoping to explore, so, you know, what are the options available for pharmacy owners? James, you've got a PharmaCelf, I believe, and of course, yeah. Kevin, you're going to have to declare that interesting. You sell MedPoint as well, but it's nice to have a balance on the line. Things like workflow implications are quite interesting. You know, contractors being contractors, you know, it's the romance of pharmacy practice, but they're needing a return on investment as well. So interested to hear about that. And just you know, if I suppose the reason I brought this together really was like, if we automate the dispensing process and we finally boot pharmacists out of the dispensary, right? What are they going to do? I remember working for a large multiple a few years ago. And there was a huge constant restructures, of course, but one of the initiatives that I remember was streamlining the dispensary, pre-robotics, of course, and pushing the pharmacist out onto the counter. Now, pharmacist-wise, I always thought that sorted the wheat from the chaff, because if you're a people person, if you really enjoy pharmaceutical care, brilliant. And therefore, I really enjoyed it, and that's what got me into prescribing and stuff like that. And I went on from there, but I just that is an unanswered question for me. You know, what we're going to do with all these prescribers? What we're going to do if everything's automated and so on and so forth? So let's see where we go. So guys, do you want to introduce yourselves? I've sort of set you up, but you might want to say a little bit about your background. And as Roy Walker said, what's your name and where do you come from?
Well, James Semple. I've been a pharmacist for far too bloody long, 35 years. Most of that, or in fact, all of it in community pharmacy, some as a locum, some as a manager for the multiple. Probably the last 20 years, I've been a contractor. I've been involved in pharmacy politics for about most of that 20 years. I don't work so much at the moment at the coalface. With the workforce problems we're having, I'm having to do a lot more than I used to, which I'm actually quite enjoying.
Yeah, I'm Kevin Murphy. I'm a pharmacist, but for the last, I've lost count of 16 years, working in Scotland as superintendent for Wellbeing Pharmacies Group since 2007, mainly focused on new pharmacy contracts, and most of our pharmacies are actually in England. We're based in Scotland. So I've kind of got an unusual insight from that point of view, because there's been a massive divergence between Scotland and England the last number of years. So if we could take the best bits from both countries, it would be great. And that's kind of what's led us to becoming an automation company, introducing dispensing automation in one of our own pharmacies, kind of opened our eyes to how much more efficient it can make things, and other factors like the change in staff costs, and just the funding model in England has absolutely forced pharmacy contractors to really rethink how they operate. And that's what led us down the route of 24-hour collection as at least partially a solution to that, or an enabler. So yeah, that's where we ended up setting up an automation company.
See, Kevin, you're obviously a very interesting chat, but I mean, you know, you're interesting in regard to this discussion because you have not control, but you manage and look after pharmacies, as you've mentioned, north and south of the border. So, I mean, do you think, you know, sort of tongue in cheek, do you think community pharmacy in England is a bit of a race to the bottom at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's maybe hopefully turning a corner because of the pandemic and because before it was very much, it really felt, and even during the pandemic, it really felt like you're the bottom rung of thinking, and from the Department of Health's point of view, in terms of every decision that was made during the pandemic, it was an afterthought, and it was really hard to take. Scotland was very different in terms of funding and just how decisions were taken. But I think it's turned a corner because I think they've realised that there is a value in having a network of pharmacies spread out. You can't. There was a definite feeling in government circles, I think, that, you know, large hubs, centralised hubs, were a great way of reducing the cost of distributing medicines, which is fine until something goes wrong with the weather, or there's a pandemic, or there's a postal strike, or any number of other issues that can happen and leave people without medicine. So I think the pandemic has kind of shown what pharmacy network is capable of doing.
I think
that's the nub of it. You know, your question that you're asking is, are robots the end of community pharmacy? Well, if community pharmacy is handing out packets, right, if that's all it is, then you just want a robot somewhere, or maybe a few, and have them delivered by Amazon or whatever, right? But the pandemic in England, and I would suggest that already in Scotland, it was already understood that this network of NHS outlets where face-to-face things can happen is actually incredibly valuable. And it's valuable, and it's almost entirely subsidised by the money they pay for us handing out those bags. Making up the bags and handing them out is what keeps the bit going that they really want. And if they took that away, they would have to pay for the bit that they really want, and they would end up paying lots more than they pay at the moment.
I think you're right, James. I suppose that's what sits underneath all of this. You know, what are those pharmacists going to do? And I suppose that, in all honesty, I'm sure I speak for many in Scotland. We are working through that. Like, we are, like, you know, pharmacy first is the plan for community practice. But are you, like, James? Are you optimistic that there's enough value at the moment to sustain a post-supply function?
I don't like the term post-supply function because it implies that I don't think there's enough for us to do that's going to keep 1,300 outlets open. There is if you allow us to do the supply as well, because somebody's got to, they've got to pay somebody to do the supply. If they pay us to do the supply, what we are seeing is we can combine that with the other things that we do. And it's the other things that we do that you really, really want. So that mixed model works. And I think if you start slicing off any bits of it, you break the whole thing. So, and in terms of, you know, is there enough for pharmacists to be on? I mean, at the moment, we're at the point where in Scotland, we're almost kind of going, right, look, stop the bus for these things. We're going to overload our guys with things that you want them to do. We've got vaccination, which, although there's all sorts of problems with vaccination, we're not doing COVID vaccines. There's differences in different health boards with flu vaccines this year. But ultimately, in the next 5 years, where do you think they're going to get most of their vaccinations done? If you were an alien and you turned up and said, like, this is the NHS, what is it you do? You want somebody to do that, somebody's arm, and you've got 1,300 outlets embedded in every community. Put them in there.
Hmm. Yeah, well, the way I talk about the network, it's kind of like distributing the risk. It's kind of like Bitcoin for you know, if there's a major event happens, you've spread the demand across a lot of single points. So there's a lot of logic in that, and that was shown during the pandemic. If you had a couple of big hubs, they would fall over, and they did fall over to some extent in terms of people were waiting well over 2 weeks. People might have complained about having to wait and queue in the pharmacy, but they're still able to get their medicines within a couple of days. It took longer when at the peak of the pandemic, but if you're using an online pharmacy and, you know, that was hundreds of miles away from it, you're completely alone and reliant on a delivery that came, you know, may have came a week, 2 weeks later. There's definitely value, but talking about what the pharmacist would do, we have to move up the value chain. It's not sticking labels on boxes. I don't want to take anything away from that. But it is a task that can be automated and done more safely by a machine to some extent, not the clinical stuff, the actual assembly and handing it out and using technology right from the start of the process of when your drugs come in from your wholesaler to when they go out the door. It's just in a way of enabling your team to do more valuable stuff. And then, we're having to pay them all more, both in terms of the workforce shortage of pharmacists and with, the dispensary team in general, with the rising costs of, minimum wages going up. So we need to make sure they're doing more valuable stuff, not doing lower value things or things that the government or the payers don't value as much.
See, Kevin, I mean, I think that's really interesting what you both kind of mentioned, sticking labels on boxes, which it's really important. I'm going to pull you back to robotics in a minute, but I speak to a lot of people across the whole sort of sphere of or the whole spectrum of community pharmacy, right? So you've got you've got the union at one side, and we are becoming a unionized profession in many ways, especially community pharmacy. So you've got that lot at that side. You've got employed people, then you've got locums in the middle, and you've got maybe pharmacy contractors and then representative bodies on the other side. You've got all the companies within that. I'll tell you something, the one thing they all say, this is part of my job, to find common ground between all those folk, is that I think if you push them, they would all agree that they do not want to be sticking labels on boxes or moving boxes as a core function. Now, I agree with you, James, it has to be, that handout process is all part of it. Getting the customer or the patient into the pharmacy, that is our USP. That's where the people are. You're in the community, the clue's in the name. But I suppose on that point, going back to your either the PharmaCell or, let's just say vending machines, Kevin, other collection machines are available, how do you do pharmaceutical care? What's the reality of pharmaceutical care then if someone's collecting their their hypertension medicine at 10 o'clock at night? Do we just write off giving pharmaceutical care, or is it just written information?
The way I describe it to people when I'm talking about it, it's basically part of your delivery service. How do you do pharmaceutical care when you're doing a delivery service? Your responsible pharmacist makes a decision. Is this appropriate? Do I need to ring this patient to talk them through something? Maybe that kind of thing. So you make a decision, and ultimately the RP is in control of what gets loaded into the machine. They don't have to. Just because you've got a machine doesn't mean it has to go in there. You may want to see that patient. Some of our customers use registration with the collection point. Create a condition that you have to come in once a year for your CMS review, for example, in the same way that GPs do that with pulling patients in for their annual review. So you do the pharmaceutical care in an organized kind of way and ad hoc if you need to ring somebody or use new technologies. We've got NHS Near Me. That's been a big success story during the pandemic. There's more than one way to skin a cat when it comes to pharmaceutical care. I don't think it's all or nothing, basically.
So is it fair to say the easy ones go, easy prescriptions go in the robot, in the machine?
Well, it's up to the pharmacist. So for example, every time somebody collects a bag from a prescription, there isn't a wonderful pharmaceutical care conversation happening there. Let's be honest. A lot of times people are going in to pick up a bag and they want to get in and out. And actually the way the contract has changed in Scotland, which is brilliant with Pharmacy First, you want your staff speaking to the people that are in to get advice and actually taking the time to record the activity, because then that's going to add value to your business. And you don't want them rushing through that person because they're worried about the queue that's behind them. So the way I look at it is, it takes the pressure off that counter, because some of the people are going, maybe 100 people a day are going to the machine. Completely aside from the pandemic and the social distancing stuff, it takes the pressure off your work environment. It means the people that are coming to the counter, you've more time to interact with them in a more valuable kind of way. And they're the ones that need the pharmaceutical care. One of the things that surprised us in our own pharmacy when we first installed a prototype was we thought that our retail sales would go down, for example, because there's less people coming across the threshold. But actually, they went up 13%, which we were surprised because we didn't do anything differently in terms of wonderful promotions around them. The only thing we can put it down to is that the people that did come in, our staff had more time to interact with them, help them to find something, advise them, whatever it might be. And that's the only thing we can work out why they went up.
I'm probably playing devil's advocate here for the sake of chat, right? But if someone on a easily dispensed medication, simple stuff, could collect their medicines out of ours, and someone on a tricky medication has to come during like pharmacy hours, the office hours, is that not a little bit of the inverse care law? Is there not a little bit of inequity there in terms of accessing the service? So the iller you get or the more complicated your condition gets, the more restricted the access to the service is?
Well, is the medicine tricky every month or every time they collect it? It's tricky one time and they may need counselling or they may need a video consultation and then it can go in the machine, or they may need a phone call and then so it's not necessarily all or nothing that every time they're disadvantaged because they're more ill. That's not the way I look at it. I think it's a bit more nuanced than that. So, as I said, there are other solutions to providing that pharmaceutical care.
The other thing that I have reiterated over and over again to the staff to make clear to the patients is that just because they get their thing out the machine does not mean that they shouldn't be coming into the pharmacy. So, you know, don't see that as a shut door that you're no longer allowed in. If you want to talk about anything, come straight in when you've got your bag.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see that. I mean, actually, most of the collections happen during the pharmacy opening hours, and the stats we've got, like 50 or 60%. And if you stood and watched, people quite often do go in. But I think the point is that they've got the choice about whether they go in or not. We're kind of empowering them, putting the power in their hands, that they don't have to rush to get to you by 5:30 or 6, whenever it is you close. They can go whenever they want if it suits them. And if they want to go in, they can go in and get advice or buy something, and they do.
So there's some notable examples of good practice, which I'll come to. I want to ask you, like, in a minute or two, if there's any examples of stuff, or, well, stuff's a bit of a simplistic term, but, like, you know, services or activity that the pharmacist has delivered that could only have been done because time has been freed up by the robot or the vending machine. I'll just ask you that now. So, I mean, you know, are there any examples of stuff that you've done or for your pharmacists have achieved that couldn't have been done beforehand?
I could give you that information because I don't think you would have had a situation before in my pharmacy, certainly, where people would be getting told, no, we're not doing that for you because we're too busy, right? What I will say is that I go into a very busy pharmacy now and it's an oasis of calm and there's no stress and the shelves are clear. And everything seems to be working extremely efficiently, and they have time to talk to people, much more so than before it.
Yeah, and that work environment is important as well, because we were talking before about, you know, a lot of the hot topic is a workforce crisis and, you know, shortage of pharmacists, and we do need to actually think as owners of pharmacies making the environment positive for both patients, because they pick up on that vibe that's a really busy, stressful environment, but also the people that we want to work for us and stay in our sector and not go to primary care or hospital or whatever. So it goes kind of both ways from that point of view. In terms of things we've been able to do differently, we've trialed different things, like, you know, erectile dysfunction medicines online, so people can collect anonymously. Basically any interaction that you can do in another way and enable the product to be collected 24/7, it opens up that possibility. We've been saved once by, we had a time where we had no pharmacists because of COVID isolation in our English branch. And the benefit of 24-hour collection, I suppose, is the prescriptions are already in the machine. They're not on the premises, so they can be collected out of ours. So if you did have a situation where you've no pharmacists, it mitigates that a little bit, because it means that there might be 100 orders that people can still come and collect. So that's during that day, it's less people complaining and less not able to access their medicines.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm sort of like devil's advocate here, because you guys, you two, you pair like advocates for this stuff. So So it sorts workflow.
Maybe should we talk about the I think when people think about robots, certainly in Scotland in the last whatever it is, there are many years since I think Bill originally got a thing for robots and loved them and wanted us all to get them. The robots that go inside the pharmacy, we might have differing opinions on.
Okay, carry on, James. Expand.
Well, you know, I'm a robot skeptic with that kind of robot. Because basically what that robot is an arm that lifts things off a shelf, right? And it's a very expensive arm to lift things off a shelf. And I quite like the arms I've already got that lift things off shelves and are a good laugh and a night out.
Okay. Kevin,
we've got one. I suppose that the problem is the human arms that lift things off shelves are getting more expensive in terms of wages and pensions and all that kind of stuff. So certainly we've had a positive. They're not for every pharmacy, though. I mean, they won't fit in a lot of pharmacies for a start. And it's a major investment. So we put it in a new pharmacy in a health centre that was, you know, blank canvas. But they've definitely grown. They've got their place. It's more, you know, it does reduce errors and again that stressful environment. And we've been able to. I think it's been an enabler for us to grow a pharmacy that, you know, really strongly and also do services, because you can grow your items and be focused on that. But really, you have to do both. You have to be able to do services. So it's about creating that environment for pharmacists able to do both. That things are kind of running smoothly.
I'm not going to argue with that, because I think that there's definitely a place for them, but it's in what you would call it, a really busy pharmacy. There's an economy of scale. There's a point you have to be at, I think, where they start making sense. Yeah. And I think there's a huge number of the pharmacies in the network, but it does not make sense. On top of everything else, you're not going to sack staff. You know, I've got places where you've got people that have been there for 10, 20 years. You're not going to go, I've got a robot, you're gone.
Yeah, I think that whole thing of building in, if you're looking at ROI and building in savings and staff costs is a kind of a nonsense, because you're not going to want to do that. Most people aren't going to want to do that. But it's only really a saving if you do sack staff, and there might be a certain amount of natural turnover, and you may be able to reduce staff a bit. But certainly our automation, we've kept the same staff, and actually it's just enabled us to get busier, and we've needed more staff. Yeah. So it's definitely, because that's obviously a concern that our own staff are going to raise, is it going to replace jobs? And it's not really about that at all. I think the point of it, the cost of it, the larger dispensing robots for smaller pharmacies doesn't make sense. And that's central, it's the investment at lots of small places. But I suppose what's happening in England, or around the corner in England, with hub and spoke legislation, which needs to be very carefully watched and is being watched very carefully by the likes of AIM, another group that we're members of, is how the legislation changes, and is it going to be hub to pharmacy to patient? I know this doesn't affect Scotland, but it's opening up the possibility of having automation, but in hubs, like outsourcing automation, essentially. So you've got things like Golden Tote in England, where you're getting the stuff delivered. So there's a central hub doing some of the automation, and so your pharmacy isn't stocking and putting away medicines and then retrieving them, because that's pretty inefficient. So things like that are kind of interesting, and we haven't trialed them, any of them, yet. There's HubRx that's in the pipeline if the law changes. Again, it's kind of outsourcing a proportion of your dispensing. But again, it's something that we'll have to kind of see how the legislation changes in England and whether the commercial model even works, to be honest.
It's reserved. So I think it applies to Scotland as well. If they change this law that stops a third party producing the scripts, it applies up here as well. So the question would be whether or not, or how we do it. And I think that hub and spoke thing is a kind of separate can of worms.
For us, we're a weird pharmacy group. We're not local. All our pharmacies are 2 hours apart, so we could never invest in a pouch machine or our own hub, which is what I would want to do. You know, it would make things a lot more efficient. So that we'd be the perfect candidate for something like an outsourced dispensing service. All the wholesalers will pile into that space. I mean, Phoenix are already set up for it to some extent with Golden Tote, if and when the law changes. But it's a big change for contractors to be letting go of that purchasing kind of control.
Yeah, and you know, that's why I don't think it's going to fly in Scotland, because I don't think anybody's going to give away their purchasing. You're in effect giving somebody else your reimbursement profit and hoping they give you a wee bit of it back.
The problem with that, James, the problem with both of you, the problem with the hub and spoke thing is that if I was got, you know, Scottish government, the UK government, doling out the dispensing pot, and suddenly you're seeing extra margin flooding into the market and passing through to the contractor right at the end, the government are going to say, well, actually we're going to cut. That's what's happened historically, isn't it? And the other thing I was going to say about hub and spoke is that, you know, the multiples have been, well, I need to be careful what I say here. The multiples I seem to recall from certain sources that, you know, packages of dispensed medication will arrive in a branch, ready to go, in clear plastic bags. So I'm not understanding what's the difference between HubRx and the Golden Tote and that when it's happening already.
Well, Golden Tote is just delivering the stock for a certain set number of prescriptions in it, one tote. So you never, that stock never hits the shelf. It's going straight into a prescription bag. So it's just more efficient because there's a lot of inefficiency. So from that point of view, I get the concept behind that. The other model, the HubRx model and other hub and spoke, will be the actual prescriptions being made up and labeled off-site and then delivered back. But again, there's lots of questions around how that works, you know, and how it's, you know, who does the clinical check and stuff. And I think it's certainly the multiples that have implemented it, it's still, there is still a check happening in the pharmacy, but that clinical check can be electronic. You know, there's no, with ERD in England, you have a prescription and it might serve similar to CMS. If it's clinically checked and then there's no changes, you could have a SOP that basically means that doesn't need to be rechecked by a pharmacist because it's clinically nothing's changed. As long as there are certain questions asked of the patient, which is part of the service spec for ERD in England anyway.
I think all of these things, there are already solutions to these problems that don't require any, you know, take for example this idea of a golden tote. My guys do that anyway. My guys go through a big massive bundle of scripts first thing in the morning, order all the stock and don't touch anything until the stock turns up. Not that they do it. So and the thing with you're talking about the clinical checking, if the software suppliers get their fingers out and fix their crappy first attempts, or certainly my software supplier's crappy first attempt, then we have a start to finish scanning solution. It means the pharmacist doesn't need to check anything except that first, or whether or not it's 6 monthly or yearly clinical check of it, and then leaves it alone. And that takes us back to what we were talking about at first, get them out of the dispensary.
Mm-hmm. See, it's an interesting conversation. I forgot what I was going to say a minute ago, but what I was going to say was, taking a step back from hub and spoke and the vending machines and all the rest of it, I think it's fair enough to say that, well, my opinion would be that, and welcome your thoughts on this, like the basic bargain with government that has, as James has sort of articulated a wee bit, has successfully been deployed and agreed, is that supply of medicines via the community pharmacy network is not going to be the cheapest,
nope,
but for various reasons, it's currently the best. So, as James hinted, there's added value services, of which we are growing, you know, pharmacy first, private services, you know, lots of IPs are going to flood the market. And the other thing is that, you know, the thing that I don't think we maybe, you know, Community Pharmacy Scotland or some of the guys speak about this a lot behind the scenes, but certainly in public, I think the value, and we hinted at it before, the value of like a disparate network of outposts, mm-hmm, for the NHS. I mean, just look at COVID. Like, you know, medicines have lots of different options and tributaries to get to the patient. You know, I just think there's tremendous value. So that's the core bargain. And I don't have a vested interest in hub and spoke, actually, but I can see strategically that it could be, just from a population and a government perspective, like problematic. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, if it's too centralized, I mean, ultimately the government could just take it over if they wanted to. Sometimes it feels like that's what they're trying to do in England, to be honest, to run contractors down so low that they just want to get out. And going back to the purchasing point, I think in England it's different from Scotland. A lot of people would be happy to give up the purchasing to some extent because they've been burned so badly by the shortages. We've got this model where we've got to have purchase margin, but it doesn't really quite cater for when a pack goes up in price by 800%, and you've got to try and you know source that. And there's a lag time. Scotland is better, but England, it wasn't so good. So I think that's kind of weakened that kind of that link a little bit. But I think what's happened in England, you mentioned about, oh, they would cut if we saw savings and extra margin because people are using hub and spoke. Well, actually, what's happened in England is they bloody cut first and then basically said to pharmacy contractors, you're not going to get paid the same for doing the same job, so you need to find other ways of doing it. So that's what's actually driving it. They've already cut. There's a big difference between margins in England versus margins in Scotland.
I think in terms of planning, we're sitting here talking about what's the future of automation and hub and spoke and robots and, you know, the brave future of pharmacy. It's very difficult to do that with respect to England, whilst it would appear that the government are in one of their throwing the cards up in the air and seeing how they land periods where they're deliberately war of attrition to see what comes out the other end. Because it makes you think of doing things that actually in the normal circumstances you wouldn't be thinking about doing.
Yeah. I mean, they've got a history of doing that.
I mean, the one that you just said there, which I've heard from a number of pretty top guys nearly going bananas about it, is contractors saying, I'd rather not do the purchasing anymore. I mean, that's commercial suicide.
Yeah, unless there's something else to replace it, yeah.
And what, Kevin, I mean, it is relevant to the conversation of robotics, because that, you're right, this huge funding cut, bollard in England has been thrown into the market, and, you know, the rug has been pulled away, hasn't it? So folk have reacted, and you know, fair play at Medpoint and others have done well.
No, I was just saying, you're saying about, is it what the strategy is in England? I don't think it's a great master plan, because the Department of Health in England have got a history of tweaking the regs and having unintended consequences, like internet pharmacies and 100-hour pharmacies. They change the regs and then realise, oh, they're all going to be in these wonderful walk-in centres, Darcy centres. And actually what turned out was they just ended up having 300 or 400-hour pharmacies all competing beside to be closer to the GP surgeries. And then they got rid of that exemption. And they've got a history of making changes that aren't fully thought through. And that's why England's ended up, it's not just the cuts. We've got, you've got other threats that have driven us towards, automation, online pharmacies being the main one, which has obviously gone up massively as a result of the pandemic. And in general, we're just in a world where I saw an article about a GP the other day talking about the Amazon Prime mentality. People are less patient. They want stuff now. They want, you're not even cooking anymore. They're using Deliveroo to get their evening meals. Like, it's crazy. So it's just us as a pharmacy business thinking about how can we compete with this? Because we're too young to retire. So we need to be able to give people what they want, and it's convenience. So whether, as much as we want to keep things the way they are, going back to the title of the webinar, what are robots going to be the death of pharmacy? I don't think so. I think people sticking their heads in the sand and not using and changing with the times are going to be the death of pharmacy, and enabling them to kind of give their patients what they want and also free up the time that they need to actually adapt and do the more valuable stuff, like the clinical services.
James, have you got a view on Amazon?
A view on Amazon? Oh, God, yes. So Kevin mentioned the decision in 2005 to allow internet pharmacy as an exemption in England. I'm right, it's about 2005, Kevin, isn't it?
Yeah, around then, yeah.
Very old, few years ago. We were absolutely no chance, we'll fight this. Fortunately, Bill at the time, who was the boss man, agreed with us. So we didn't have an exemption for an internet pharmacy. The risk remains, though, which is why we've been extremely reticent about moving to electronic scripts. Not because we're Luddites and not because we don't think electronic scripts is a good idea, but because we've basically said we'll do it once we work out a clever way of not having a pharmacy to use situation. Because at the moment, I actually think I'm shooting myself in the foot here. I'm sitting in Gourock, right, about a mile away from the biggest Amazon warehouse, and I've got a pharmacy right next to it. I could sell that for more than any pharmacy in the country, just have it relocated into the Amazon warehouse. I care too much about my colleagues to do that.
Spoken like a true champagne socialist, James. Crack on.
But that's the loophole. Amazon just need one contract. One contract plus electronic scripts. Bang. They can do it like.
Yeah, you know, well, we already have electronic scripts in the form of UCF. That's the thing. But you are right. Operationally, it's the thing that made the difference in England going fully. It wasn't really until EPS, whatever it was, 2 came in England that it just made life a lot easier for internet pharmacies. And essentially, even though they are supposed to service the whole country, they make it really difficult to use paper scripts. You have to fill out a form and post it off with it. So, you know, they just put barriers in the way. So, you know, it is a very important thing in Scotland to keep. Well, if electronic, it makes sense to introduce electronic prescriptions, but do it in a way that kind of avoids that.
And it's not easy because, you know, every time somebody thinks of a solution, you go, but well, we already do that. And we already do that. And we'll, well, make it you can't deliver them. We already do that. You know, so it's not easy, but there is minds being put towards how we do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, we now live in rural Aberdeenshire, so in the Cabra. So, like, you know, west, northwest of Aberdeen by about 45 miles. So, it's the sticks, right? And occasionally, if I order something on Amazon, it comes the next day, and I just think, how did you do that? You know, it's like, it's an incredible outfit. And you're right, James, on one level, we can't compete with that. But as I said before, it's the whole package. And fascinating to hear some of the decisions back in 2005 with Bill Scott, one of the previous chief pharmaceutical officers. I mean, what an important decision that was. Goodness me. And as you said, what was that, James?
That one, the internet pharmacy and the 100 hours exemption. Thank God we didn't go down that route.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think we would have pharmacy first, or I don't think we would have, like, I don't think pharmacy, I don't think anybody thinks pharmacy first is the finished article.
No, far from it.
There's a few things coming together that give us a chance, don't they?
I mean, I think, they make a big difference. I think Amazon might be the big bad wolf that never really turns up. To be honest, people talk about it. They could have easily entered the market at any point. They've already got a relationship with Morrisons. They could have bought Morrisons. That would make sense to me. They could do it in a heartbeat if they wanted to, but it's a difficult regulated market. And at the end of the day, I always compare it to the kind of what happened with the grocery sector. They tried it there. The grocery sector reacted quickly and did the stuff that Amazon was doing well, the logistics, giving people a slick online way of ordering, home delivery, all that stuff. They did it quickly enough that Amazon didn't really penetrate the market. And if pharmacy does the same, there's a load of stuff that we do. We all know that pharmacy, there's a lot of stuff that happens face-to-face or even on the NHS near me, clinical services where you need that relationship or that you know, lower volume sort of size of a site. If we do that stuff really well and we do the stuff that Amazon offers or Amazon at all offers, like the logistics, like giving people convenience, then you're not going to have that driver from a patient's point of view to change because they're only going to move if there's a reason to move online. There will be some people that are in the back end and over where it just makes sense to get something in the post, but for the large majority of the population, they're near, everyone's within 15-20 minutes of a pharmacy. I think they've got this Scottish government policy now, the 20-minute neighborhood, so you're close enough to that pharmacy. And I think we're not really pharmacies. I kind of often describe pharmacies as walk-in clinics. You know, that's basically what we are and certainly what we need to become.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, listen, I'm gonna draw to a close. It's been an interesting chat, folks. I think I've concluded that robotics will not be the death of community pharmacy.
Jonathan. The death of community pharmacies every year, and it never happens.
Yeah, fair enough. But it's been an interesting chat, and thank you both for your time. It's been absolutely brilliant. Interesting insights around even back in 2005 and taking us all the way back to the origin of some of this stuff. And yeah, so future's bright, I guess, in Scotland. Maybe go by Kevin, England. England still has some work to do. But yeah, we'll leave it there. And thank you very much for your time, chaps.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks, guys.